Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on energy when we come back. The lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. This class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of this alleged crime, or what you should say to the police or investigators and what you ought not to say to the police. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself in your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, motion hearings, trial, and appeal. And you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits and evidence, conduct a discovery, do legal research, and follow the rules of court. Now, there are 28 elements to learn in courtroom strategy and procedure. And rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent is ever going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. So keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. And then, shut up. Now, after Rule 1 is out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's free of charge. And you can call 417-273-4967 to order yours. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about energy. Energy comes in a lot of forms. Petroleum, nuclear power, wind power, solar power, hydropower, biofuel, wave power, tidal power, coal, biomass, and geothermal. Boy, that's a bunch. Now, the biggies are petroleum, coal, nuclear, and hydroelectric power. Let's talk about hydropower, because hydropower has been around in this country from the very beginning. In fact, the first electricity that was generated in this country was generated by a dam and hydropower up at Niagara Falls. So hydropower has been around for a long time, but it only generates about 7% of the electricity that we consume in this country. But there's a potential. If you were to take all of the electric power that we consume in the United States, we could produce 35% of it, one-third, by hydropower alone. Hydropower wouldn't power 100% of our needs, but it's a renewable source. It's there forever. For instance, our power here, where I live, is hydropower. We have a dam down here called Bull Shoals Dam. Now, I've been here 25 years, and there's an impounded reservoir, and it just runs out, and it's just the natural hydrologic cycle, and it's free energy. And once you build this thing, from then on, it just produces power day in and day out. And it also produces recreation. It's a big business, this thing of recreation, because without this dam, there wouldn't be the reservoir. And without the reservoir, there wouldn't be all the boats. And they've got several boat manufacturing companies. I mean, there are literally thousands of boats. This dam creates a reservoir called Bull Shoals Lake, which encompasses 1,200 miles of shoreline. It's got more shoreline than Lake Michigan. And there is that's just one dam here. There's 10 major lakes right here within 100 miles of my home. And it creates just a gigantic industry for tourists and fishermen and boats and on it goes. I don't know how much money it's worth, but it's probably worth much more money than the electricity that's being generated. Now, the purpose behind all of this was to generate electricity. They built 10 dams to generate electricity, and they have spawned off an industry here with all these tourists and the rest of it that is much bigger than the electrical energy that they are, the electrical industry that they had sought to create to start with. This article comes from Wikipedia again. It's on hydropower. Remember, Wikipedia, Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, tells us quite a bit about this thing of energy. Now, hydropower, or hydraulic power, is the force of energy of moving water, and it may be captured for some useful purpose. Prior to the widespread availability of commercial electric power, hydropower was used for irrigation, the operation of various machines such as water mills, textile machines, and sawmills. A trompe produces compressed air from falling water, which could then be used to power other machinery at a distance from the water. The energy of moving water has been exploited for thousands of years. In the history of India, water wheels and water mills were built in Imperial Rome. Water-powered mills produced flour from grain, and in China and the rest of the Far East, hydraulically operated pot wheel pumps that raised water into irrigation canals. And in the 1830s, at the peak of the canal building era here in the United States, hydropower was used to transport barge traffic up and down steep hills using inclined plane railroads. Direct mechanical power transmission required that industries using hydropower had to locate near a waterfall. For example, during the last half of the 19th century, many grist mills were built at St. Anthony Falls, utilizing the 50-foot drop in the Mississippi River. The mills contributed to the growth of Minneapolis. Hydraulic power networks also existed, using pipes carrying pressurized liquid to transmit mechanical power from a power source, such as a pump, to end users. Today, the largest use of hydropower is for the creation of hydroelectricity, which allows low-cost energy to be used at long distances from the water source. In hydrology, hydropower is manifested in the force of the water on the riverbed and the banks of a river. It's particularly powerful when the river is in flood stage. The force of the water results in the removal of sediment and other materials from the riverbed and banks of the river, causing erosion and other alterations. Now, the types of hydro machines are water wheels, used for hundreds of years to power mills and machinery. Hydroelectricity, usually referring to hydroelectric dams or run-of-the-river setups, such as hydroelectric-powered water mills. Damless hydro, which captures the kinetic energy in rivers, streams, and oceans. Tidal power, which captures energy from the tides in horizontal direction. Tidal stream power, which does the same vertically. And wave power, which uses the energy in the waves. We'll talk a little more about that a little later. Now, hydroelectric power now supplies about 715,000 million watts, or 19% of the world's electricity. In other words, about 20% of the electricity used around the world is produced by hydropower, about the same amount of electricity as is produced here in the United States by nuclear power. Large dams are still being designed And the world's largest is the Three Gorges Dam on the third longest river in the world, called the Yangtze. Apart from a few countries with an abundance of hydropower, this energy source is normally applied to peak load demand because it's readily stopped and started. It also provides a high capacity, low cost means of energy storage known as pumped storage. So hydroelectric power is used here in the United States as an alternative source. In other words, we're burning coal that produces 53% of our energy. 20% comes from nuclear power. So that's pushing 75%. Then this is only 7%, but it's a very critical 7%, and that's because it can be turned on and off very rapidly. Now, here in the United States, we've got 50 states. Actually, there's only 48, because Alaska, you know, they're not on the grid, neither is Hawaii. And Texas, last I heard, was off the grid, but then somebody told me the other day they joined up. But it's a very intricate system. That is, electricity that's produced in New York can be transferred to California. Now, it is true that there's a transmission loss. When you transmit this electricity from point A to point B, you lose about 5 to 10% of it in the transmission lines. So electricity isn't very efficient when you get right down on the, you know, to where the rubber meets the road. First of all, remember, in the coal-fired power plant, you can only get about 30 to 35% energy out of the coal that you're burning. And then after you get through with that, you lose 5 to 10% of it transmitting it from one part of the country to the next. And the further you transport this electricity, the more of it you lose to line loss, they call it, line loss. But the system is a marvel. I'm an absolute marvel. When I saw the numbers and the statistics and the diagrams of it, I looked at that and said, oh my God. When I read that story, you know, in Genesis 11, where God said, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. I think even God himself was amazed at the innovative technological bent that we humans have to making nuclear weapons or transporting electricity or manufacturing machines. I mean, you know, you get right down to it, we're all pretty smart people. Pretty smart animals, as they call us in evolutionary terms. But anyway, the grid is set up so that it's in blocks. So you got the grid system in New York, then you got the grid system in New Jersey, and you got the grid system in each and every one of these states. Well, at any given time, every state produces more electricity than they can use. And electricity cannot be stored. So, you know, you can say, well, you can store it in batteries, but, you know, we're talking about, billions of watts of power, and, you know, you can store a little of it in electric batteries, but for practical purposes, you can't store electricity. So the hydro power plant is where you open the valve, and the water comes out, and it runs down a pipe, and it turns a wheel, and which is connected to the generator and generates electricity. And so the various locations where these dams are located can actually store that electricity in the form of water behind the dam in much the same way as we store electricity in a storage battery. And that's why they use these hydroelectric sources of generating capacity to augment the coal and the natural gas and the nuclear power plant. For instance, when you crank up a nuclear power plant, that thing is running 24/7. And the most efficient use of it is to get 100% utilization of the heat that you're generating. Same thing with coal fire. So they crank up the nuclear power plant and they crank up the coal-fired power plant. They run this thing just at 100% capacity. All right, now, the peak load in the grid comes at certain times of the day, you know, from 6 in the morning until 10, and from about, 5 o'clock at night until about 10 o'clock at night. There are these two peak periods of time when we use most of our power. And then when we go to bed at night at 10 o'clock, from about 10 until 6 o'clock in the morning, we don't use very much electric power. And so the hydroelectric power supply, when they're running that thing, they're pumping water with it. And they pump the water from down below the dam back up into the top of the dam. And they use the, you know, that it's not very efficient, but you know, every gallon of water that's stored up on top, you know, runs down later and makes electricity during these peak demand periods when we're all running our air conditioners at the same time, or when we're cold and we all turn the heat on at the same time. Well, they have to manage that. They have to manage that. And so when the people in California are using their peak power, you know, from 6 to 10 o'clock, the people in New York City, they're already going to bed. They don't need that power that they're generating in New York. So they need to move that power from New York to California. Now, how do they do that? Now, here's where technology really shines. What they do is they take the power from New York and they move it to California by first taking the power from Nevada and moving that to California. Well, now Nevada is short of power, and so then they go to the next state over, which is Utah, and they get the power from Utah for Nevada. Well, now Utah is short of power. Where are they going to get it? Well, then the Utah people, they get it from Colorado. Well, now Colorado is short of power. Where are they going to get it? Well, they get it from Nebraska. Well, now where are the Nebraskans going to get it? Well, then they're going to get it from the next state over and the next state over until you get back to New York. And all of this has to be synchronized. I mean, the guy that's delivering the power from New York to California, he has to be in touch with the Colorado guy, the Utah guy, the Nevada guy, and all of this system has to work, and it works flawlessly. Once in a while, there's a little glitch, and there's a big blackout or a brownout. But, you know, on balance, if you take a look at the system that we've designed here in the United States, it's a marvel. And hydropower, which only produces about 7% of the total power use, plays a very vital role because it can be turned on and turned off very rapidly. Now, when we get to wind power, you know, you only get the power when the wind is blowing. And when the wind isn't blowing, well, then where do you get the power? So the wind farm is pretty good. And when there's power available, you know, you can crank up the coal-fired power plant, or you can slow it down. And so at certain times of the day, you know, when the peak power is needed, they're cranking that coal-fired power plant up, and they're just using more and more generators. And then as they're running out of peak power, then they start closing them down. But it doesn't work nearly as well because of the efficiencies involved, as does this hydropower. Now, hydropower produces essentially no carbon dioxide or other harmful emissions, in contrast to burning fossil fuels, and is not a significant contributor to global warming through CO2. I already reported that. CO2 does not contribute to nuclear warming or global warming. Global warming makes the CO2. The CO2 does not make the global warming. In 2005, the U.S. generated about 10 to the 12th power kilowatt hours of electricity. The total undeveloped hydropower resource is equivalent to about one-third of total U.S. electricity generation in 2005. There's a lot of hydro energy available out there, but here again, every time that you generate hydropower, you're taking money out of the Rothschild and Rockefeller piggy bank. And that's because they're selling coal and oil. And they're not in favor of hydropower at all. They're not in favor of nuclear power, wind power, solar power, and all these alternative energy sources. And that's why these alternative energy sources produce less of the total. And that's because the two big players are coal and oil. And they're going to remain the big players until the second coming. you can just sit back and relax and rest assured that that's the way that's going to be played out. Coal is the dirtiest form of power. It's the least desirable. And it is the most utilized because the people that own the coal are going to burn that first. And they're going to buy the Congress and the President. And it doesn't make any difference what party you subscribe to. They're going to buy that party. Bottom line. But just for your information, so that you know, that when you're listening to the Katie Couric News Hour and she's telling you about the energy crisis and the energy problem, so that you can understand that it's really driven by money, it's driven by politics, and there's a status quo that's out there. And you and I need to understand it so that we can profit from it. You know, I make money off of the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, because I understand what they're doing and how they're going to do it and how that's going to impact upon my business. And so then I just move my business model to conform to the business model that's already established, and then I prosper using the Ten Commandments instead of using the Ten Planks. Now, I'm going to show you how to do that as we progress along here, but so that we can understand it. Petroleum, nuclear power, hydropower, and coal are the four primary modalities for generating electricity here in the United States, and indeed for the world as a whole. And it's going to continue to be that way. Now, it is true that these alternative sources that the greenies are constantly talking about are indeed better sources of power. And in fact, if you just used solar power, which we'll talk about in the next program, in Germany, they plan on using solar power to generate 20% of all of their electrical needs. That would be the equivalent of all the nuclear power plants in the United States producing 20% of our power. They're going to do that in Germany using solar power. In fact, they're already ahead of schedule. They think 30% of their power is going to be generated by the year 2020 by solar power. And Germany is the world's preeminent leader in solar power generation. But again, it's being motivated by money. You see, They have to buy all that coal and oil, and so they've got to have a changeover. They've got to have that source of power. Well, if they can do it in Germany, we could do it here in the United States. And the tragedy here in the United States is that one third of the electrical capacity that we could be using in the United States from water power is being wasted. It's not even being developed. Primarily because the greenies are opposed to it. Now, let me give you an illustration of this. Take the Columbia River. Back in the 1930s, during the Roosevelt period, they went and they built six big dams up and down the Columbia River. Grand Coulee, I think, is the biggest, and McNary Dam, and there's four others there. And somebody said the other day, you need to tear those out and let the salmon run up and down the river. You see, in the mindset of the greenies, the environmentalists, you can have electric power or you can have fish, but you can't have both. In the minds of the industrialists, you can have electric power or you can have fish, but you can't have both. Now, I think that people that are smart enough to put an electric grid together and deliver electricity from New York City to Los Angeles and to do it with the flick of several switches are smart enough to have both electricity and fish. Honest to God, I believe we can have fish and electricity. And if we put our minds to it, I'm sure that we could accomplish that. Now, we're not going to. That's a given. We're not going to do it. But it's not because we can't. It's because we won't. It's a political problem. It's that top-down mindset again. As long as you got this top-down economy, then you're going to have a top-down result, which is poverty. Stand in line and share the shortage. And that's because when a few hands are in control, those few hands are working for those people's personal interests, not for the personal interests, not for the needs of millions of people. When millions of people are in the pie, those millions of people are working for the interests of those millions of people. When five people have control of the pie, then the interests are just for those five people, not the millions that need it. That's the way of communism. That's the way the system is designed. Now, I was working with a woman named Helen Chenoweth years ago, and she was developing little small hydro power plants. Now, they say there's one-third of our generating capacity available. Well, that's commercial power. The truth of the matter is there's a lot of private energy out there that nobody even counts. Let me give you an illustration. Let's take solar power, for instance. I've got a solar power plant here, but I'm not counted in the production of solar electric energy. Now, in Portugal, they have a solar power plant that powers about 8,000 houses. It's a commercial plant. That's the only thing that these people count are the commercial plants. They don't count the little private plants. So in California, when they build a house and they put a solar plant on top of the house, they don't count that. What they count is when ExxonMobil puts in a solar power plant. They count that as solar-powered electric generation. But if 10,000 people put 10,000 little plants in and take 10,000 people off of the grid, they don't even count it. So when we talk about geothermal power, and on PBS, you know, Exxon or Standard Oil, they've got a big plant at Geyserville, California, which powers the city of San Francisco. San Francisco gets most of its power from Geyserville, from geothermal power. And that's a great energy source. There's no two ways about it. But it's just one big multinational corporation that is dabbling in geothermal power, and they could produce 10 times that. They could put in these geothermal plants all over the United States, wherever there is hot water, like at Yellowstone Park, for instance. But they don't, and they won't, because their real primary interest is selling natural gas to generate electricity, not geothermal. Now, with that in mind, this hydropower, as Helen Chenoweth was working on, was for little streams and creeks. I mean, you can take any little power plant. If you've got water that'll fill an inch and a half pipe with a 30-foot head, you can generate all of your electricity for your own home. Inch and a half pipe with a 30-foot head. That's 30-foot full. And there are literally millions of those kind of places all over the country. Now, what they're talking about here is commercial plants, you know, like the Three Gorges plant in China. If you went up the Colorado River, you got two big dams on the Colorado, but if you put in a series of dams up the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon, where it falls about, you know, 1,000 feet down through the canyon from the top, I think it's 2,800 feet, and it falls down to about 1,800 feet at Hoover Dam. So you get about 1,000 feet of fall, as I recall there. I mean, you could put in 6, 8, 10 dams in there. You could have 6, 8, or 10 more Hoover Dams just on the Colorado. Now, that isn't going to happen, but, you know, the logical use of that. Here's this huge canyon in the ground, great big hole in the ground with a river running through it that you could tap the energy at Glen Canyon. And then you could do it 10 more times before you got to Hoover Dam, and then you could get it out of Hoover Dam and probably 10 more below Hoover Dam before the river finally empties out into the Gulf of Lower California. And all of that energy from the Colorado River could be tapped time and time and time again. And what we do here on the farm, we call those step ponds. We start up at the top of the gully, and we put in a pond. And then we go down below that dam and we build another one. And it backs up to this first dam, and then another one backs up to the first dam. And therefore, we can arrest erosion, and we could generate power the same way. We don't. And that's because, again, we prefer the dirty power from coal to the clean power of hydro. And then you'd have all these lakes up and down. And then, of course, somebody says, well, we want the wild rivers. What for? Well, so the yuppies can run up and down the wild rivers with their rafting tubes and their rafting boats. Okay. That's like locking up the oil in Alaska. You know, when was the last time you went up to the tundra to view the pristine wonders of the Arctic? And the answer is, you never have, and you aren't going to, and you never will. But yet you join some group over here to lock up the oil so that where you need it in New Jersey, you can never have it. What kind of sense does that make? Now here you've got this Grand Canyon over here with this wild river. Okay. The Chinese were smart enough to take that Yangtze River and dam it up and do something constructive with it. That's called dressing and keeping the garden. Use the natural resources that God gave you and use it intelligently. And you could have all that clean power up and down the Colorado River, which is going to waste. Now, that could generate one-third of our electric power with hydroelectric. But in addition to that, you could generate probably double that by using all the little streams and creeks. But you see, when you're talking about commercial power, you know, big corporations, they only want to put in a huge dam like Grand Coulee. They don't want to put in a little power plant over here to power your one home. But what's wrong with using the same technology to dam up little creeks and rivers to generate electricity and put that into the grid as well? It's not that we don't have the energy available. It's the unwillingness to use the raw materials that are at hand. That's why I tell my students, say, my God, opportunity is everywhere. It's like rain. I mean, the sources of energy that could be developed are everywhere. Just open your eyes. But when you have top-down management, then we're not going to look at anything that's little. We're only going to look at big. And big is coal. Big is oil. Big is 200-foot coal seams in Wyoming with 109-car coal trains, one every 15 minutes running down the tracks. You can damn well bet that Union Pacific Railroad sure as hell isn't going to be out here promoting hydropower up the Colorado River. They're going to be saying, oh my God, we'll lose our wild river! That's what I'd do if I was running the Union Pacific Railroad. I'd be promoting wild rivers and streams. I sure as hell wouldn't be promoting hydroelectric power if I've got three tracks running a train every 15 minutes. I mean, let's follow the money, kids. Now, if we were talking about hydropower from the bottom up, we'd be talking about the development of hydroelectric power in every little stream, every little creek, every little river, everywhere in America, to use the cleanest source of electricity available, which is hydroelectric power. That's what we started with back in the 1880s, but then we found that coal makes more money. So, follow the money. Now, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us at 417-273-4967. Let me give you a source of information on hydropower. Comes from Wikipedia, W-I-K-I-P-E-D-I-A, the free encyclopedia on the Internet. Talking about hydropower over here. Here in the United States, we're wedded to this concept of imports. We're running a balance of payments deficit of about $800 billion a year. That's a lot of money, $800 billion a year. Now, we're exporting $200 billion, and we import $800 billion. That, even by itself, is unsustainable, and you are now witnessing the demise of the United States of America economy. We're going into bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, on a national scale, is called a Great Depression. The Great Depression of the 1930s was the bankruptcy of the United States. We've been through this before. We went bankrupt in 1783. We went bankrupt in 1929. And we're bankrupt again in 2008. That doesn't mean that the people of the country all die or that they go to foster homes or something. It means that there's going to be a massive change in who owns what here in this country. And you're going to live right through it. And you're probably going to find most of what you think you own today is going to be transferred to and owned by somebody else tomorrow. Now, part of the cause of this is a policy that we embarked upon years ago. It's a cause and effect relationship. We decided that we wanted to practice communism rather than the Ten Commandments, and so we made that choice. As a result of that choice, we stopped building hydro plants in this country. We have stopped all big or major commercial dam production. And then we're working at the state legislature level to discourage any production of power outside of the power grid. And hydropower is one of those. Let me give you an illustration. We produce 5%, you know, it's 6.7, but for rounding it off, 5%, we could be producing 35% or 7 times as much commercial power through hydro generation. Instead, we're buying our energy from the Arabs. Now, let me ask you this, what sense does that make to you? I mean, you know, just think about this pragmatically now for a minute. Wouldn't we be better served as a nation of people, just you and me, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, if we abandoned the purchase of all of this oil from Saudi Arabia and instead concentrated on building hydropower plants in the United States? Every time we would build a dam, instead of buying oil and indebting ourselves to the Arabs, we would be employing people in the construction industry building dams for ourselves in our own country to generate our electricity instead of buying oil or natural gas to generate that same electricity. Instead of generating electricity from gas and oil that we have to import, we would generate electricity from hydropower plants that we built with American labor, which would be totally energy independent from outside sources. And instead of 5% of our energy, we would be producing 35%. And every time the construction crew got through building some big dam across the Colorado River, I mean, we got 10 or 15 of those dams just on the Colorado. We could take a river like the Eel River in Northern California, or the Russian River, and we could put smaller dams across those rivers. We could use the water for irrigation after we've generated the electricity. And instead of outsourcing jobs to China and India, we could create jobs here. It was estimated that we could employ 2.5 million Americans in the manufacture of oil from oil shale here in America. And I got to ask the question, well, wouldn't it make more sense to employ 2.5 million Americans producing oil shale than to buy oil from Saudi Arabia and then outsource jobs to India and Pakistan and other places? I know that it wouldn't be as good for the world economy, and it wouldn't be near as good for the Indians and the Bangladeshis and the Pakistanis. I don't deny that. And it's good that we produce those jobs for all those good people over there, and all of those profits for the multinational corporations that are moving their jobs to Mexico and all these other places. But what in the hell does that do for you and me? I know it's totally selfish. And frankly, I'm just thinking about George Gordon. I say to hell with the Pakistanis and the Indonesians. That's just my personal opinion. To hell with them. Now, it makes a lot of sense, you know, if you're running like the Stanley Company in New Haven, Connecticut. They moved to Stanley Tools, you know, is an old-timey company here in the United States, and they produced tape measures, the Stanley tape measure and Stanley tools. They finally moved, and Senator Kennedy really criticized them. He said, "You dirty, low-down, no-good Americans, you mean you're anti-American, moving your manufacturing plant out of New England and moving it to Mexico or wherever in the hell they moved it to." Well, let me ask you this. I was over here at the, think about this now, I was over here at the hardware store the other day, and I saw a tape measure, one of these 25-foot contractor tape measures, you know, carpenter's tape measure. I'll pull it right out of my pocket right now. It says 25-foot measuring power tape. And it's got a big yellow sign here in the middle of it, big yellow label here in the middle of it. It doesn't say where it's made. Okay, and I'm looking for the Made in China label on it. It's on here someplace. And it looks just like a Stanley tape measure. I mean, it is a carbon copy of it. Yellow and all, and silver case and metal, you know. And I bought this for $2 over here at the... I paid $8 for my last Stanley years ago. $8 for a Stanley. I paid $2 for this. Tape measure, 25-foot tape measure. Looks just like the Stanley. Now, you know, when we go into a store and we want to buy a tape measure, and I'm just like everybody else, you know, I want to buy this tape measure, cost me $2 rather than the $8 Stanley. Can you understand then why the Stanley Company had to move out of the United States and get cheaper labor? See, the Stanley Company, if you want them to pay you $20 an hour making Stanley tapes, then you got to pay them $8 for a tape. If you want to pay $2 for a tape measure, then you got to pay a Chinaman $1 a day to make that tape measure over in China. But that adds to your balance of payments deficit. And that's what's bringing on your Great Depression. Now, we used to have a time in America when Americans worked and we had top wages and we paid top dollar and we bought American cars. Today, we buy Japanese cars. And we buy Chinese tape measures, and we buy our textiles from Bangladesh and Pakistan. And, you know, it makes all the sense in the world economically, except that now we don't have jobs in America. That's because the companies here in America are exporting their jobs overseas. What I'm suggesting here is, how in the hell does that benefit you and I, Joe? Sally? You see, I think we were really better off 50 years ago here in the United States when we worked and produced our own. And we weren't real concerned about world markets. And we weren't concerned about outsourcing. You know, Americans back in the 1950s really didn't give a rat's rectum one way or the other whether the Chinese ate or died. And we were buying Chevrolet automobiles and we were just living kind of high on the hog and just doing real good for ourselves. And I'd suggest that we'd be better off if we did that today. Just my suggestion, you know. Now, that isn't going to happen. And we're going to continue to import $2 tape measures. But you see, one of these days, the Chinese are going to cut those off. So I read to you yesterday, I told you a little story here a day before, about this highway patrolman, you know, said, hey, you better get ready for this because this is coming. Remember the story over here, the implosion is accelerating, prepare while you can. You're not going to prepare, Joe. You're going to sit here and wait until this thing envelops you. And then you're going to cry like a spoiled brat. And then you're going to cry out to Senator Kennedy and Dianne Feinstein, do something, save us. Hell, it was Dianne Feinstein and Ted Kennedy that voted for all of these world globalization programs to start with. And now that you've got them, you got to live with them. And I say, we'd be better off building dams across the Colorado River, up and down the Grand Canyon. I know as heretical as that sounds. And employing millions of Americans producing our own energy here in America. And to hell with the Saudis and the Iraqis. And that would have to do with a limited government and minding our own business, which we're not going to do. Americans have their nose out of joint. It's been out of joint for 100 years. And our nose is in everybody's business around the world. We're the nosiest buttinskies that God ever put breath into. They're called Americans. They have 730 military bases scattered all over the world. But we also, like the Roman Empire before us, they have our legions spread out all over the world. And our economy is spread out all over the world. And our manufacturing base is now located in China. And we're not paying the Chinese for all the work that they're doing for us. And 99% of our shoes come from outside of our borders. Now let's wake up to reality here. This is what happened to the Argentines. When they got to the point where they couldn't service their debt, they were put on COD. Companies in China wouldn't sell the Argentines anything unless they paid for it. We Americans can pay for $200 billion a year worth of goods and services. The other $600 billion that we're buying currently is on the cuff. That on the cuff is going to be cut off when we're put on COD. And boys and girls, we're importing two-thirds of our oil from overseas. That means that our oil is going to be shut off for at least two-thirds of it. And our shoes are going to be shut off, well, at least two-thirds of it. Now, when that happens, if you don't have your shoes, this is what this highway patrolman is telling you. Hey, if you're not stockpiled up with your shoes, then you're going to have to stand in line and share the shortage. You need to make your preparations now. You got to get ready now. And if you're not, well, then okay, stand in line and share the shortage. Get your ration card. Get your mark of the beast. Sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. Now, I'm not designed that way, and I thought, well, it'd probably be a little better, you know, if we started thinking about ourselves ahead of the Bangladeshis. See, those Bangladeshis, they need to practice the Ten Commandments just like we need to practice the Ten Commandments. And they need to stop practicing communism like we need to stop practicing communism. You know, before we started this communist tirade back in 1933, we Americans were doing pretty well for ourselves. If you take a look at the history of America, take a look at our economy, take a look at our growth, take a look at our military, take a look at our politics, we were just doing kind of nicely and handily, practicing the Ten Commandments. And one day we woke up and said, no, we'd like to have top-down management like they have in Russia, Germany, China, Japan, and all the rest of the totalitarian states around the world. So we said, okay, we'll do it. And we did. And now we're getting the same results in America that they got in China, Japan, Russia, Germany, and every place else in the world that's tried communism. So don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I mean, you know, get after it. But again, I got to ask the question, what's wrong with hydroelectric power? Now, I'm going to get off into solar power, but I'm going to wait until the next program, and we'll talk about solar and wind and the alternatives. These are the biggies. Petroleum, nuclear power, hydropower, and coal. Those are the biggies. That's where 80% of the energy that we use in America is electrical energy. 20% of it is in our automobiles and heating our homes and the rest of it. 80% now is in electricity. And we could produce one-third of it through hydropower. We're not. We're only producing 5%, 6.7%. We should be producing five times that amount of clean hydropower, employing millions of construction workers. Instead of all you guys that are out there in construction and unemployed right now, today, when the hell aren't you out there building us a new hydropower plant? That's what we need. We don't need Saudi Arabian oil. ExxonMobil needs Saudi Arabian oil. Not you, Joe. Joe, you need a job working, building something. You don't need to be buying any more Saudi oil. And that's another thing. We don't need more coal-fired power plants. We need more nuclear-fired power plants. Not less, more. We need more hydroelectric dams. Not less, not none. We need more, which employs Americans. Now, we're not going to get that. And I'm not sitting here telling you, you know, that if you vote for Hillary or Barack now, they're going to make some kind of a change. There's not going to be any change from Republicans and Democrats. Change is going to come from Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Change comes from you and me. I changed from communism back to the Ten Commandments. That's what made America great to start with. It was the Ten Commandments, not the Ten Planks, that made us great. If you want greatness in America, it's going to come from God and the Ten Commandments. It's not going to come from the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. It ain't coming from ExxonMobil, Barack Obama, or Hillary Clinton. It ain't going to happen. Now, we're going to have $6 a gallon gasoline, and we're not going to build any dams in the Colorado River, and we're going to have less and less electricity. So that means that if you want electric power, Joe, then you're going to have to produce your own. It could be your own little hydro plant. It could be your own solar plant. It could be your own this or that or something else. It is true, we could do a lot better. We could conserve more. We could do all these great, wonderful things that these politicians are talking about. But politicians are full of hot air. They just talk and talk and talk and talk. They don't have any substance behind them. They don't have any real work or work ethic. All they do is talk and BS, talk and BS. Hillary Clinton is just one big BS machine. Nothing more, nothing less. So is Barack. And that clown, that Republican, what the hell is his name? John McCain. Nice guy. Gotta love John. He works for the CFR. He works for the Trilateral and the Bilderbergers. Nothing's going to change with the political establishment that you have. If you're placing your confidence in the political establishment, you've been doing that for the last 75 years. The problems that we have in America are caused by the political establishment. What in the hell makes you think they're going to solve the problem? That's like going to a doctor to get cured from cancer. The guy says, I don't know what causes it. I don't know how to cure it. But I got a treatment. The politician doesn't know what caused our economic problems, doesn't know how to fix it. What in the hell do you want to go to a politician for? Now, the solution to our problem is economic. and the economic problem is caused by thou shalt not steal. It's the violation of that law. It's the unjust weights and balances that you're using in the form of Federal Reserve notes, paper money, unjust weights and balances. That's where the problem starts. Then it exacerbates itself. It gets worse. It builds like a cancer tumor growing. And so now you've got an economy that is in decline. And the solution is, Ben Bernanke, our helicopter Ben, says, what we need to do is print more money. Did you get that? The problem we got here is inflation, so we need to print more money. I mean, these guys are a joke at the very best. The best we could say is that it's a tragic joke. Now, these people are not dumb. They're not doing this accidentally. They're not doing this because they don't know the truth or because they don't know the answer to the riddle. They make money off of inflation. Government makes money off of printing money. Government makes money off of your poverty from inflation. And so do the multinational corporations. And the people that are running this operation all know that it's coming to an end. It's in terminal condition. Now, we're in the decline now, and this decline goes on for the next 2 or 3 years. That's what happened from 1929 to 1933. 4 years of decline. Then you hit the bottom, 1933. Then you bounce on the bottom, 34, 35, 36. In September of 37, we see a slight uptake. The economy starts to grow. It took until World War II to turn this thing around. You can expect more war, more violence, more inflation, depression, bankruptcy, shortages, standing in line, ration cards, the mark of the beast, everything you don't want, don't need, shouldn't have, and can't use is coming. You're ready for it. And the hydropower, the hydro story. We're using 6% hydropower, and we could be using 35%. The truth of the matter is we could be producing all of our electricity from hydropower if we'd work from the bottom up. It's a tragedy. But then it's a self-imposed tragedy. You got all that energy running down the wild river so that you can, a few yuppies can go jump in the river. And run up and down the river and then talk about, oh my God, look at the endangered species. I tell you, boys and girls, the human race is an endangered species, and 90% of us are going to die between now and the second coming. That's what Jesus himself told you. 90%! Now we got the Club of Rome telling us the same thing. Everybody's on the same wavelength. Now, boys and girls, when you take 6.5 billion people and you kill 90% of them, I say, now that's a disaster. That's a catastrophe. And it's a self-imposed catastrophe. Self-imposed. It's a wound, but it isn't a wound that we haven't done to ourselves. Now, if you want to stop wounding yourself, then you need to go back to the Ten Commandments. We'll start talking about that next time when we're talking about solar power, wind power, biofuels, wave power, tidal power, biomass, and geothermal. That's next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, I got to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.